What I'd like to do is just give a reading about practice. A few pages that give a perspective on Ajahn Chah's approach to practice and training. And then we'll take the opportunity to have some time of walking and sitting. So this is after Ajahn Chah has started his meditation practice. He's gone off and practicing in the forests and as a Tudong monk, as a wandering monk. Lumpa continued his practice at Ban Kokyang for almost 3 weeks and then set off walking once more. As he passed through the small villages of Sisongkran, he felt a profound sense of calm and fluency pervading his mind. The Dhamma flowed effortlessly, both in answering his own doubts and also those of the villagers that, some nights, would come to his gloat, and that's his umbrella in the forest with mosquito net, bearing offerings of tobacco and betel nut. And there's a footnote on that. As smoking is not expressly forbidden in the Vinaya and the health hazards associated with it were not known at the time, many forest monks of Lumpa's generation smoked. The Sangha of Wat Bopong outlawed the practice in the late 1960s. So bearing offerings of tobacco and betel nut lit by their smoking torches. Lumpa crossed over the Mekong River into Laos for a short period in order to pay his respects at a famous shrine. After returning to Isan, he decided to rest at a monastery outside Ban Nong Kha. At that time, his old iron bowl had a number of cracks and small holes in it, and the abbot offered him a replacement. It was another opportunity for him to reflect on his desires for requisites and to be reminded that his practice was still not as unshakable as he would like. At Ban Kokyao, he had experienced a profound level of peace, but now, not too much later, defilements led him astray once more. And then this is Lumpa talking about his experience. They offered me a bowl, but it was cracked and it had no lid. Then I remembered once as a child taking the water buffaloes out to graze and seeing other lads carving vines and weaving them into hats. So I asked for some rattan. I wove a disc and a rectangle and then joined them. I had my bowl lid. The only thing was it looked like a sticky rice basket. On arms round, it was a real eyesore. The villagers referred to me as the big bowl monk. I just dismissed it. I tried again. I worked day and night on it. It was the wrong kind of effort, fired by craving. At nighttime, I would light a torch and work alone in the forest. Weaving the strips backwards and forwards, I knocked against the end of the torch and drippings from it scalded my hand. I still have the scar to this day. I came to my senses. What am I doing? I'm thinking about this in the wrong way. I've become a monk, and now I'm going without sleep just to get robes and a bowl. This is the wrong sort of effort. I put down the work, I sat, and thought things through, and then I practiced some walking meditation. But as I walked back and forth, my mind returned to the bowl lid, and I went back to the work, completely absorbed, until just before dawn. I was tired. I took a break and began to meditate. As I sat, the thought came again. This is wrong. I started to drowse a little, and I saw a vision of a huge Buddha. He said, "Come here. I'm going to give you a Dhamma talk." I went towards him and prostrated. He gave me a discourse about the requisites. He said that they are merely the accessories of the body and mind. I woke with a start, my body shaking. Even now, I can still hear the sound of his voice in my ear. I'd learned my lesson. I'd been blinded by desire, but now I stopped. I worked for a reasonable time and then rested, walked and practiced sitting meditation. This was a really important point. Formerly, whatever work it might be, if it was still unfinished and I put it aside and went to meditate, my mind would still be attached to it. I couldn't shake it off. However much I had tried to lever it out of my mind, it wouldn't budge. So I took this as a mental training, a training in abandonment, in putting down. Whatever I did, I determined not to finish it quickly. After working on the bowl lid for a while, I would go and practice meditation. But whether I was walking or standing, my mind would be wrapped up in the bowl lid and wouldn't concentrate on anything else. I saw how difficult it is for the mind to let go. It clings so tenaciously, but I gained another principle of contemplation. Don't hurry to get anything finished. Do a little and then put it down. Look at your mind. If it's still going round and round with the unfinished work, then look at how that feels. That's when it starts to be fun. Go to battle. I was determined not to stop until I had trained my mind to the point that when I worked, I just worked. And when I stopped, I would be able to put the work down in my mind. I would make work and rest separate, discreet, so that there would be no suffering. But it was extremely difficult to train in that way. Attachments are difficult to abandon, difficult to put down. The idea I'd had of getting things over and done with as soon as possible wasn't exactly wrong. But from the point of view of Dhamma, it's not correct. Because there's nothing that you can know once and for all if your mind refuses to stop. I came to reflect on feeling. How can you let go of pleasant and unpleasant feelings when they're still present? It's the same as with the bowl lid. So this was the principle. Don't do anything with the thought of getting it finished. Put it down at regular intervals and go and practice walking meditation. As soon as my mind went back to worrying about the work, I'd tell it off, oppose it. I'd train myself, talk to myself alone in the forest. I just kept fighting. Afterwards, it was less of a burden. As I kept practicing, I found it easier to separate work from rest. After that, whether it was sewing robes or crocheting a bowl cover or whatever I was doing, I trained myself. I could do it, or I could put it down. I got to know the cause of suffering, and that is how Dhamma arises. Subsequently, whether I was standing, walking, sitting, or lying down, I felt a radiance and enjoyment that lasted until, finally, the bowl lid was finished. But in Omsran, the villagers still looked at me and my bowl with baffled expressions. Sometime later, I remembered having once seen a kind of tray in someone's house in Bangkok, that's his home village, that would make a reasonable bowl lid. So that's what I did. I got hold of a tray, bent the edges up, soldered them, and used that as my lid. I never thought of asking anything from anyone. But Lumpa's tribulations were not at an end. Iron alms bowls demanded a lot of attention. Monks had to be constantly on their guard against rust. One method of protecting the bowl was to varnish it. And this is him speaking again. Later on, I remembered that as a novice, I'd once seen a monk using the sap of the giyang tree to varnish his bowl. So I thought I'd give it a try. I went down to Bangkok in Lerngok Tha district because there's a lot of giyang wood down there, and I painted my whole bowl in the lid. A layman suggested putting it in a basket and lowering it down into a well so that it would dry more quickly. 3 days and it should be ready for use. Fat chance. I waited over a month and it still wasn't dry. I couldn't go on alms run. I couldn't go anywhere. During meditation, thoughts of concern for the bowl would arise. I spent my whole time lifting the basket up and down that well to check on whether the varnish was dry. I really suffered. In the end, I realized that even if I left it in the water for a year, it probably wouldn't work. So I asked the layman to bring some paper to wrap around the outside of the bowl. Then at least I could go an alms round. I was afraid of the coming consequences of asking the lay people for a new one. I just endured.